right a dinghy that was loose, but the evidence is such now that the case has all but been reopened and Robert Wagner has been named as a person of interest. The autopsy report revealed that Natalie Wood had bruises on her body and arms, as well as an abrasion on her left cheek, but no indication as to how or when those injuries occurred. And Joseph McBride, your thoughts about what occurred 40 years ago today in California.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, thanks for having me. Well, I was a big admirer of Natalie Wood. I met her once, and I thought she was a very underrated actress, a really fine actress, and it really hit me hard. I was a screenwriter, a Hollywood reporter, and, you know, you get used to people dying, and I wrote a lot of obituaries, but her death really hit me. I mean, it was just so horrible, and it came came 13 days after William Holden, who I also loved greatly. You know, I never met him, but the two of them meant a lot to me, and it's just so horrible, and especially the way both of them died, and her death was mysterious, still is, and deeply disturbing.
Now, William Holden died in mid-November at his apartment in Santa Monica on Ocean Drive. He fell in a drunken stupor and hit his head on a nightstand, and instead of calling for help, he bled out and he died and was dead for a few days before his body was found. There is very little doubt about how he died. Now, Natalie Wood died just, as you say, 13 days later. And one of the great curiosities is that Stephanie Powers, who was William Holden's companion, was starring in a TV series, a very popular one at the time, Heart to Heart, with Robert Wagner, the husband of Natalie Wood. Now, Wagner and Wood had married in 1957, then divorced, then remarried in 1972, and by all accounts had a tumultuous relationship. And Joseph, two witnesses now say they heard, these were people on a nearby boat, a woman screamed for help during the night, and the L.A. coroner's office and others have reopened the case and have called Wagner a person of interest. So what is going on contemporaneously in this case?
Well, I remember at the time I read in the Los Angeles Times about this woman on a nearby boat. Boats were moored at Catalina, and this woman heard Natalie Wood screaming, help, 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 and she didn't go to help her. And I was so angry that I was going to find her phone number and call her and express outrage. And she's been quoted recently. Lana Wood, Natalie's younger sister, just published a book called Little Sister, My Investigation into the Mysterious Death of Natalie Wood. And she treats that woman kindly. They met. But, there are all kinds of rumors swirling around this case, and I don't pretend to have a solution. I don't think anybody does. But it's interesting that three people who were on the boat, all three of them are still with us. And Dennis Davern, the captain, in 2011 said he lied to the police, and Wood and Walken were arguing. Wood and Wagner were arguing, I'm sorry. And there was a rumor that Wood and Walken had an affair on the set of Brainstorm, which was in the midst of shooting, and there was some kind of altercation on board, and then Wood went into the water. She had 14% blood alcohol in her system and some pills too, and so they claimed at first that she slipped overboard and fell and maybe hit her head and was dazed in the water. She was terrified of water ever since she was a child, so some people think it's uncharacteristic of her to be wandering around outside, but she was trying to get into a dinghy, possibly. Anyway, that's one story. But then there are people who blame Wagner, but I don't really have any insights. I have one story about her that might shed some light. In 1976, the one time I met her, it was at a party for the film Midway in Century City, and Wagner was in that film. She wasn't in it, but she was there. And I went up to her, and I said, I'd like to interview you for a film comment about your film career, because I think you're a terrific actress. And she was in seven or eight classic films, and she was very nice and very eager, and she seemed very flattered. And then Robert Wagner suddenly appeared, and she said she would do it, and then Wagner came over and he was giving me kind of the evil eye, I thought, you know, kind of looking at me in a very jealous way. And I got intimidated, and he said, well, call my office, you know, in a very brusque way. And I never did, because I felt sort of like, you know, it's good in between a husband and wife there. And I just wanted to interview her, and I really wish I had. That's one of my regrets. So that's my little insight into
that's
Natalie.
That's a good story.
She dated
a lot of famous people, including purportedly Frank Sinatra, even Jerry Brown, the former governor of California, and she lived a full life in her 43 years, starting when she was very young. In many ways, was America's sweetheart, and she died tragically, is buried at Westwood Memorial Cemetery. And Robert Wagner, according to reports, never goes there. He lives in Aspen, Colorado, and he is married for the third time to another well-known actress, although not as well-known as Natalie Wood, Jill St. John. But Robert Wagner is now 91 years old. You stated he's still alive. Why don't the L.A. cops tell him he's got to come and answer some questions?
Well, I don't really understand that. It was 2018 when they described him as a person of interest, and the coroner's office changed the death report to drowning and other undetermined factors. And you would think that they would investigate it. In Hollywood, and I'm not saying anything about Wagner particularly here, but there's a long history of the DA's office and the police covering up for Hollywood people who, you know, commit crimes, and it's in many notorious cases we could talk about. Some are in the rumor category and some are better documented, but it's a sad fact of life that stars get better treated in some ways. They get treated with kid gloves, and sometimes they get treated harshly because they're stars, but other times they get, treated very well when ordinary people would be grilled very intensely, et cetera.
It is curious, Joseph, that this happened 40 years ago today, and the story has gained momentum to the point where in 2018, 37 years removed from Natalie Wood's death, Robert Wagner's named a person of interest. Compare that with O.J. Simpson, which occurred in 1994, 27 years, and now it's kind of waned. People were riveted to that story for a while, and it's gone away. But on this one, there are many questions to be answered, and Wagner has, some would say, conveniently moved to Aspen, Colorado. He is 91 years old. Some would say, look, even if he did it, it would be unseemly to reopen this today. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, murder has no statute of limitations. We don't know what happened, and there may have been a scuffle or whatever, and that's what the rumor mill was going strong about, you know, why she may have fallen or been pushed or whatever, and Walken has never talked about it either. I have another spooky story. The day of her funeral, I was driving through Westwood. I'd just been interviewing Richard Silbert, a great production designer who worked on Splendor in the Grass with her, and I said, oh, you aren't going to the funeral? He looked kind of funny, like, oh, I don't know why. But anyway, I was driving through Westwood, and I saw the procession of cars leaving the cemetery, and as I always do as a reporter, I just fell in behind the line of cars. I knew that she lived nearby, and I drove a short distance to her house, and I parked across the street from her house, and cars were pulling up, and a limo pulled up right in front of me, you know, like 5 feet in front of me, and the door opened, and there was Christopher Walken looking at me, you know, 3, 4, 5 feet away, and he had completely stunned, ghastly expression on his face, you know, very bizarre to see him just right there. And then he reportedly walked through the house, and a lot of her friends were there, and nobody said anything to him. Nobody knew what to say. Well, and he's been quiet all these years.
He has. A very good actor in his own right. But he was married at the time, and yet he was on that boat alone, which some would say was kind of interesting, a weekend with Natalie and Robert Wagner on their boat, and he's got a wife, and she's not there. And as you say, there are rumors, for what they're worth, that something might have been going on with Wood and Walken. But there still are many threads of interest in this case, and it is shrouded with mystery, and we'll talk a bit more with Joseph McBride about this and more when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana and a few more minutes with Joseph McBride, very talented writer of many books, and as we know, not only is an authority on the JFK assassination, but for many years he's followed Hollywood. He's written the definitive works about the great actor Orson Welles, who along with Warren Beatty is the only man to have been nominated in the same year for Best Director, Best Actor, Producer, and Best Film. And Orson Welles did it for Citizen Kane. But right now we're talking about Natalie Wood. She was only 43 years old when she died 40 years ago today, so she's been gone almost as long as she was alive. She started acting at age 4, was given a starring role at age 8 in Miracle on 34th Street, 1947. As a teenager, she earned a nomination for Best Supporting Actress by the Academy for her performance in Rebel Without a Cause. And she was married twice to Robert Wagner. Their first marriage ended. She was in the throes of an affair with Warren Beatty, and Wagner, as you would imagine, did not like that. But other stories have come out in recent years about Wagner's activities with both women and men. And whether those are true or not, it was, as stated earlier, a tumultuous relationship. It ended in Natalie's death. It was thought to be an accident. Now the LAPD says they don't know, and they'd like to question Robert Wagner, but they have not ordered him to come back to Los Angeles from his home in Aspen to answer questions. And he is 91 years old, and at this age in life, he may not all be there, but he has been interviewed in recent years and appears to be doing well. And a listener, Joseph, says, how could Robert Wagner have done this? He came across as the most likable guy, and I loved him as an actor. I really liked that show, It Takes a Thief, when I was a kid. But sometimes that's what they call it, a crime of passion. Maybe that's what occurred. We don't know, but there are many questions that have not been answered appropriately, and Wagner's in no hurry to go back and talk to the cops in Los Angeles. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I always try to refrain from judging, you know, unless I know all the facts, and I don't, and also people's relationships. You really don't know unless you're part of it. Wagner has written 3 books with Scott Eyman, who's a well-known biographer. Wagner has given his side of the story in 3 different books, and he's also written about other women in Hollywood. And, you know, when I think of Natalie Wood, and I mentioned I wanted to interview her, I'll just mention some of her other great films. The Searchers, the great John Ford film.
Yes.
Splendor in the Grass, wonderful performance, directed by Ulia Kazan. She was in West Side Story, and the remake is about to come out. And Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, a wonderful film.
Great film.
Performance. Driftwood, a beautiful film as a child that she did. And Tomorrow is Forever with Orson Welles. And a wonderful comedy, The Great Race, directed by Blake Edwards. Inside Daisy Clover. I mean, what a group of films that she made in her short life. And many other good films and TV shows, too.
And I doubt that we'll ever really know. And Robert Wagner will probably remain just as he is, a person of interest. And if he did not do this, if he was not responsible in any way, then he too is a victim. But it is curious that he has not been forthcoming in talking. He said he talked with him once, and that's enough. And that's, he may have lawyers telling him to do exactly what he's doing.
So, well, he's got those 3 books, so he's told his part of the story. But let me just say a bit about William Holden, if I could. When he died, Billy Wilder, who I just wrote a book about, was asked by the New York Times for his comment, because he directed him in Stalag 17 to his Oscar and Sunset Boulevard and Fedora. And he said, "I really love Bill, but it turned out I just didn't know him. If somebody had said to me, Holden's dead, I would have assumed that he had been gored by a water buffalo in Kenya, that he had died in a plane crash approaching Hong Kong, that a crazed, jealous woman had shot him and he drowned in a swimming pool, but to be killed by a bottle of vodka on a night table, what a lousy fade-out for a great guy."
Another tormented man, but a great actor.
Yeah.
Man at Ronald Reagan's wedding, by the way, but William Holden was the real deal. I loved his performance in Network near the end of his life. I thought that was a majestic performance. And
The Wild Bunch also.
I mean, with Sam Peckinpah, Yeah.
He had such authenticity and such depth and maturity, as Wilder said, and I just felt that he was the real thing, and I just, all screenwriters identify with his character in Sunset Boulevard, the kind of hack screenwriter who's trying to stay alive in Hollywood, and so he just has a great authenticity to his work, and so did Natalie Wood. I mean, tremendous emotion that she poured out, and you really felt, Kazan said, you look in her eyes, you could see that she was really feeling the roles and communicating with other actors, and he really was a great director of actors, and he understood what made her so good. And it just leaves a big hole in our lives when these people leave prematurely like they did, I think.
Another listener notes that Thomas Noguchi, the famous, or some would say infamous, Los Angeles coroner at the time, lost his job because he told too much. Hollywood didn't like it very much, gave all the gory details of Holden's death, and based on what he knew at the time of Natalie Wood's death. And, of course, he never shied from he liked television cameras as much as our junior U.S. Senator,
well,
John Neely Kennedy.
I like Noguchi. I mean, I think he's a truth teller, and he did the autopsy on Robert Kennedy, and he's the one who showed that there were Kennedy was shot from contact range in the back of his head, and Sirhan, who allegedly killed him, was never closer than 3 or 4 feet in front of him. So that leads to the conclusion of two gunmen. So I think Noguchi, I think that's why he got in trouble, frankly, was that conclusion. So I think he's an honest coroner, and that's rare in Los Angeles to have honest officials, frankly, you know.
Well, Joseph McBride, we look forward to talking with you again and about Billy Wilder and your book about him. I'm sure will be the definitive work on one of the great directors in Hollywood history, also, like Natalie, buried at Westwood Memorial Cemetery.
Indeed. He had a lot of great people there. It's a good place to visit and think about them.
Thank you, Joseph. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. Bye.
And in just a bit, we'll hear from the spectacular singer from New Orleans, Philip Manuel. But before we get there, it's notable that LSU is still in the hunt for a coach. And today was going to be the day in which Scott Woodward would have hired Lincoln Riley, the coach at Oklahoma. But Lincoln got a better deal in his mind and his heart from the University of Southern California. So he's headed for USC, like my friend Eric DeWeese, who left Baton Rouge for USC. Lincoln Riley never got here, but he was all but hired, according to reports. LSU had even planned a rally for him in Tiger Stadium, and it has not happened. And Scott Woodward, who's known for hiring big-name coaches, now is back in the market, and some of the big names have been taken. Billy Napier, who's kind of a big name at UL, certainly. The coach at Lafayette, who led the Raging Cajuns to an 11-1 season, he's off to Florida, so goodbye, Billy Napier. We'll see what Scott Woodward does. One of the coaches still supposedly in the hunt is a gentleman named Matt Campbell at Iowa State, who turns 42 today. He's African-American, and he has had a good career and at a place where it's tough to win games, and he would be a stellar coach, and he looks like he's built like a 747. The days of the fat coaches and even fat sports writers, those days are coming to an end, because if you're in sports, you ought to look the part, and this guy definitely looks the part. So the name Matt Campbell might become a household name in Louisiana, or maybe Scott Woodward has some other surprise. It is known that the coach of the bowl game is the offensive line coach, Brad Davis, who is making $850,000 a year to coach LSU's offensive line, about $100,000 more than the president and chancellor, William Tate, earns. But Brad Davis will become the first African-American head coach, even if it's only one game, as he coaches LSU in a bowl game. And Coach Ed Orgeron closed his career in grand style. His team went 6-6 after going 5-5 last year, but the Tigers upset Texas A&M 27-24, a last-minute victory over the Aggies in Tiger Stadium. And Coach O leaves on a high note. His career record at LSU, 50 wins and 20 losses, certainly much better than the 10-25 record he had when he was head coach at Ole Miss. But Coach O is gone. He may very well end up having to testify. He never really answered questions about the Gloria Scott and Derek Geis affair, but he is still a principal in some of these investigations regarding Title IX. And Scott Rabelais in The Advocate noted that the Title IX issues may have caused Lincoln Riley to go away and go to Southern California. But LSU has a team that's about 85% African-American, and Kim Carter, the former Olympian from LSU, writes that LSU should hire a black coach because the players are black. 877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana number. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Londra Villarreal and Caroline Menville Alonso are producing, and we're joined by Philip Manuel, the spectacular singer who calls New Orleans home. He grew up there, and like many other great singers and musicians, the New Orleans flavor resonates in a big way with a young man named Jonathan Michael Batiste. He's 35 years old as of November 11th, and he was born in Metairie, has a New Orleans background, as we know, and has been the band leader and musical director on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert since 2015. But he's been nominated for 11. That's 11 Grammy Awards. This is, as my mother used to say, high cotton. And Philip Manuel, let's start with John Batiste. It's an amazing story, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you
it
what.
It is pretty amazing.
Let's hear a little from Jonathan. Caroline's
okay.
Got him.
Put down my alto saxophone, yeah. Buck tripping down on a boulevard. I couldn't wait to blow my own horn. It ain't wrong for you to play.
All right, he attended St. Aug, by the way, and
yep.
The New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, and you know the family well.
I do. I have a long history with the Batiste family. When I was, I guess, I'll try and make this story quick. When I was, I guess, 12, the police department decided to do a citywide talent show. And what they did was they had smaller talent shows in different communities, and the winners from each community participated in the big show at City Park Stadium. And every community show had a different house band. Well, the show that I did in the Fern and Edinburgh community at the time, it was called the Batiste brothers, they weren't called that then, they were called the Gladiators. They were the band. So they were my band in the individual competition, and which I won. And then we went to the big show at City Park, which they were my band there. And I also won that one. And we became fast friends after that. I started performing with them around town. I have to tell you, Jim, I was like 14 or 15 years old performing in little nightclubs.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, took some chances, but I got to know the Batiste brothers and the Batiste family very well. I mean, we got to be good friends. I would go out to their home. They actually lived. And I would go out to their home and just hang out with them, you know, and in addition to all the music we played together, we just got to be good friends. So I know the family pretty well.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to join us with Philip Manuel, and you can send emails as well to talk@talklouisiana.org. And Philip Manuel knows well that there are many families. He grew up pretty close to the Nevilles as well. You know, most great athletes don't have great athletes as their kids. It's amazing, but there are exceptions, but it generally doesn't happen. But in music, especially in New Orleans, it's a family tradition, isn't it?
It must be in the water. Because you're absolutely right. When I think about the different prodigy of musical families here, you got, of course, Ellis, who can almost say he single-handedly you know, created a jazz market. There's the Batiste family, there's the Neville family. And while my family doesn't have the same fame as the rest of those families, my father and all of his brothers and sisters were phenomenal musicians. And my brother and I, of course, we both went into music. So it does happen here.
It happens, and Philip continues to do his deal, and his birthday is on the 21st day of December, and he not only likes his birthday month, but of course it's close to Christmas, and for those of us who've known you, this time of year, usually there's at least one big Christmas performance as far as the music of Philip Manuel. What's going on with you?
Well, on the 23rd of December, which is a Thursday night, I'll be doing two shows at Snug Harbor. My Christmas show, which features the music from my Christmas CD. And, you know, I do that show pretty much every year. So it's kind of an annual thing. And I celebrate my birthday at the same time, so it'll be fun.
And you do Christmas music, you know,
all the stuff from my record.
And some of the people you love best, and you sound a lot like on occasion, Nat King Cole, Andy Williams, who I know you treasure, they're known probably as much for their holiday music as they are for their other music, which, of course, was exquisite as well.
Yep. You're absolutely right. Both of those guys did great holiday albums. I mean, Nat King Cole's is the quintessential holiday album. But I tell people when they buy my Christmas record that maybe only second to that Nat King Cole's record, my Christmas record will become your favorite Christmas CD.
877-217-5757 is your number. Caroline, I need you to look at the computer. And Philip Manuel is with us, and he is a man who has immense talent, and it doesn't happen every time he comes on the show. It seems it always happens that someone asks about Geno's and your legendary performances there through the years. Are you going to be at Geno's anytime soon? Ask Tracy at the Capitol.
I haven't spoken with Geno in a long time, and I know he's still doing music there on Thursday. There are no plans for me to be at Geno's, but I wouldn't mind going back and doing a night there. It would be fun. Geno's always fed me well.
The food there is pretty good, and it's still going.
It's spectacular.
You know, Geno's got blasted by Hurricane Ida, lost their roof, but they got back pretty fast. How did Ida affect you in New Orleans?
Well, my house did okay. We had some rental property. My mother-in-law's house needs a new roof, and there was some damage on the roof at a piece of rental property that we have, but no real substantial damage, thank God.
877-217-5757, and we're getting lots of emails for Philip Manuel, and we talked off the air a few days ago. Somebody who knows you pretty well is aware of your many talents, and one of those is that Philip, in addition to everything else, is a real estate agent, and I hear the market's pretty hot right now. Is it hot in New Orleans?
The market is good here. You know, in certain price ranges, it's better than in others, you know, but it is good. You know, I have a few things in the hopper, you know, just had a closing the day before Thanksgiving and got a couple of more scheduled for December. So yeah, things are good here. I should have started in real estate 35 years ago. I love it.
Well, it's a city that, like most cities, the very nice areas, the market is hot, and homes, I would expect, in New Orleans. I remember about 15 years ago, Daryl Davis told me at that time that we're talking 15 years ago. There was one home in Baton Rouge that year that sold for over $1 million. And now $1 million is not an uncommon sale, is it?
No, it's not. There are a lot of million-dollar homes here in New Orleans and homes close to that. I mean, there are a lot of $700,000 to, you know, $950,000 homes here in New Orleans. But yeah, the $1 million is not the big threshold anymore.
Well, Philip Manuel, on December 23rd, 2 days after his birthday, will have a late birthday celebration, an early Christmas celebration at Snug Harbor. Showtime is when?
8 and 10.
8 and 10. Two shows from right. Philip Manuel, who does it like nobody else. And Philip,
Thank you.
I know you take care of yourself too, and you belie the calendar. Philip's a few years older than I am, so we know he's had some years in his career. But you sound as great as you ever did, and you look fabulous. So thank you so much. About as good as it gets.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Philip, and keep going, my friend. You're a treasure, Philip Manuel. And congrats to Jonathan Batiste of New Orleans, who's been nominated for 11 Grammy Awards. By the way, I'm looking now at the Las Vegas odds for what they're worth on the next LSU football coach. And the favorite in Vegas is Lane Kiffin, 2-1. the coach at Ole Miss, of course, is a guy who's a very close friend of Coach O. They coached together at the University of Southern California, and he's done a wonderful job at Ole Miss, and they beat LSU this year 31-17. But he's a guy who purportedly is hard to control, and Scott Woodward might want to shy away from him, but he's the favorite in Vegas, 2-1. Mark Stoops, 3-1, the coach at Kentucky. Matt Campbell, the guy I mentioned, the coach at Iowa State, is 4-1. Then Luke Fickell at Cincinnati, 9-2. Dave Aranda, I don't know if he's signed that deal yet, the former defensive coordinator for LSU, 5-1, head coach at Baylor. And Billy O'Brien, the offensive coordinator, University of Alabama, is 11-2. We will see what happens. And we're about to go to a break, but we're going to hear from a man who calls Louisiana home, those of us who've known him since he was a young man, and now he's almost as old as I. He's past the 60-year mark, is John Schneider. And he's, of course, presiding in large style in Livingston Parish and has a new production, Poker Run. And we're going to talk with him about that and more. And he was affected adversely by Hurricane Ida. So it's been quite a year for John Schneider, who keeps on going, and another guy who takes good care of himself. He works out as much or more than he acts, and it shows, and he's featured in this new indie production and Lifetime movie. So we'll round the corner and head for home with John Schneider in our final segment. Your number is 877-217-5757 after this two-minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and we're pleased to have the remarkable actor John Schneider, who calls Livingston Parish home. He's been there for a while now. Camp Singing Water is where he sets up shop. Of course, he travels immensely and is featured in many productions across the country, but some of them have been produced right here in his backyard, literally. And his latest production, opening Friday of last week, to good reviews and good turnout, Poker Run, a feel-good holiday flick. Good morning, John Schneider.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, I tell you, well, first of all, it's not a holiday flick. I had a movie on Lifetime on Friday night with Reba that was, in fact, a holiday flick and a lot of fun. And it marks one of the only times, other than when I did the Haves and Have Nots, I don't work for other people anymore. I love hearing your station. I love listening to your station because my wife and I are very much like, I tell people that we are the farmer's market of independent media. And what I mean by that is whether it's music or whether it's a movie or any form of content, we dream it here, we make it here, we then also distribute it here. So we are, there's a lot of people out there who want to work for the machine that they complain about. Well, it's hard to really call the machine out on its flaws when you are indebted to it.
Yeah.
You know, when you owe your soul to the company store. So what I want people to understand about what we do, we've had a tremendous success now since Friday with Poker Run. Poker Run is our sequel to Stand On It, which was a tribute to Smokey and the Bandit.
The Burt Reynolds production.
Me, are you ever going to make a Dukes of Hazzard? Well, I don't own the rights to Dukes of Hazzard, so I can't. But I can do a movie about a guy who used to drive an orange car with a rebel flag on the roof because I'm that guy. So you got to be smart. You got to be smart like a farmer, like someone who's in agriculture. Mm-hmm. You've got to outsmart the grain silo. And that's what we have done here. And I am so delighted to be in the state of Louisiana because this truly is a state where people are not only encouraged to think freely and to create freely and to be truly the masters of their own destiny with regard to whatever vocation it is that they choose. But you are encouraged to thrive here. And I've been living in Louisiana now since 2011. My wife and I now have made probably recorded six albums, if not seven, because we do soundtrack albums to these movies. But Poker Run is our 10th film. And we have broken all of our own records since last Friday. We put the movie out on Friday, so that's, what, 3 days ago. And when the movie came out, we were in Tennessee driving our dirt track cars at the 411 Speedway. So we don't only depict this sort of lifestyle, we live it. We live this lifestyle. So when you come to our farmer's market and buy our cotton or our lettuce or our corn vis-a-vis our music or our movies, we are truly appreciative of it. And it just, it fuels our fire. It makes it it possible because the movie is now already, the movie it has not paid for itself yet, but I have every reason to believe that by Christmas we'll be in profit.
All right. Well, you can actually go and view Poker Run, go to johnschneiderstudios.com. Or Cineflix Dodd, that's CineflixDodd.com. But go to John Schneider Studios, that's an easy one to remember, .com. And you mentioned Burt Reynolds, who died in 2018. And
yes,
many discounted him as a serious actor, but I think he was number one box office 5 years in a row, and nobody's ever done that. And the two of you were kind of kindred souls, weren't you?
We were. Later on in life, Burt and I became very good friends. Also, Hal Needham, who directed and wrote Smoking the Bandit. And we talked many times, many, many nights over some great tequila about why in the world did Hollywood drop the whole Southern horsepower comedy genre? Because not only was Burt Reynolds king, but Burt Reynolds was king of that. And by that, I mean a guy that's the greatest driver in a car you've ever seen, or in a boat, or on a backhoe, or on a anything, a skid steer. And that all kind of went away. So because I'm the guy from Dukes of Hazzard who is a car nut, I mean, I've always been a car nut, we talked about one day bringing that back. And I can remember, like it happened this morning, Bert saying, you know, if there's anyone who has the pedigree to do that, it's you, because you so obviously love it. And like I told you, when the movie came out, we were in our dirt cars, open wheel modified, racing on Friday and Saturday.
And this is from a guy from Mount Kisco, New York, who fell in love with the South.
But you know, where I'm from in New York is a very small town. Ponchatoula is a bigger town than Mount Kisco. Hammond is a much bigger town than Mount Kisco. Now, Holden is a smaller town. I tell you, we've got one light, and most of the time it works.
Well,
I am from a small town. And but I have that spirit, and I'm so delighted that people have made Poker Run a hit, because it is absolutely a runaway or a drive-away hit. We are doing a big event at John Schneider Studios here on December 11th to celebrate our law enforcement. It's a free concert. We have a couple of pastors coming in, not the least of which is Greg Locke, who's been getting all kinds of press, both good and bad, you know, but if you don't get bad press, then it means you're really not onto something. I encourage people to come out to John Schneider Studios on December 11th. We will also be showing Christmas Cars, which is, in fact, the movie about the guy who used to drive the orange car that got devastated by the floods we had in 2016. So, you know, I love Louisiana. People say, wow, you know, another hurricane, are you going to move? I said, no, hurricane shmurricane. You know, I love this state. I love the people in it. I love the spirit of the state. And I finally feel like I am gaining traction in this business I've been in since 1968. And it is largely because of the spirit of Louisiana. And I know that.
All right. Well, December 11th, John Schneider Studios, big event.
We're having a free show out here. Come on out.
All right.
If you want to watch Poker Run right now, it's Cineflix DOD, which just means digital on demand. I don't like Netflix. I don't like their politics. I don't like their policies. So I have no vision to have anything to do with them. I am truly independent. So
all right.
Cineflix,
well,
DOD.
Cineflix DOD.
DOD.
All right. Now, a listener who's heard you on other iterations of this program notes that about a year ago you and I were talking and you noted that you one of your favorite films is The Candidate, which next year will be 50 years, by the way, since Robert Redford.
Oh, my gosh.
And asking if you're going to reprise it as an actual candidate and run for the U.S. Senate. Is that possible in 2022?
You know, I think the wagons are circling. I'm sitting back and watching what is happening here. I'm very encouraged by Virginia. I'm very encouraged by the near turnover in New Jersey.
Well, I think we're speaking to a conservative here. Are you a registered Republican, John?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, then I think you should challenge John Neely Kennedy.
I'm thinking about it, but I'm going to have to be pushed from one side and pulled from the other side because, I mean, I believe we have this under control. If we don't, then I will throw my hat in because someone has got to gather the rural troops,
well,
of which there are far more than the other.
Well, the consultant, Roy Fletcher, who you may have talked to, he said he heard you. He wanted to talk with you. He said you would be John Kennedy's worst nightmare because they say of candidates sometimes he looks like a movie star. Well, you are a movie star. So.
Well, I appreciate it. I believe that I'm in a position here in my soul where if things are allowed, and I do mean allowed because bad things happen when good people do nothing. If things are allowed to get any worse, then I am going to jump in.
All right. Well, John Schneider, we wish you well. And obviously, John is a man who doesn't shy away from his beliefs. And for those of us who have beliefs that are somewhat different, we always admire people who put their name and their reputation on the line. And Schneider's done that despite being a movie star, knowing that he may ruffle a few feathers. Thank you, John. And we do want to announce before we go that Report Today Business Report founder Ralph McCollister has retired after 40 years. Julio Molera has acquired the multimedia publishing company that includes Business Report, 225, and InRegister. So we wish Julio well. Long time the number two guy there. And Ralph, of course, is a guy who made a big impression, ran for mayor in 2000. And if he had been in a runoff at that time, he quite likely would have won the election. But Ralph McCollister retiring, and we wish him well. Signature support for our program is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay safe and stay tuned.